The Summa Theologiae is arguably the most important work of St. Thomas Aquinas, written in the latter half of the 13th century. As the name suggests, it's a summary or a compendium of all philosophical and theological learning regarding God and man. The three-part division of the Summa indicates this, as the first part generally deals with God, the second part, which is itself subdivided into two parts, regards man, and the third part regards the God-man, that is, Christ. I will be presenting only select articles from the Summa, but I encourage the listener to read the work in its entirety if possible. The manner in which I'll present each article is slightly different from the way St. Thomas wrote them. The order in which he presents each article is the following. He first presents the strongest arguments he can muster against the answer that he will give to the question. Then he begins his response using an authoritative text, usually from Scripture or from a philosopher or a church father. Then he proceeds to give a more lengthy and substantial response, and only after this does he respond to the objections given at the very beginning. For ease of listening, I'll present his explanation first, and then present each objection followed by its response. First part, question 12. How God is known by us. Article 1. Can any created intellect see the essence of God? It is written in 1 John 3:2, "We shall see him as he is." Since everything is knowable according as it is actual, God, who is pure act without any admixture of potentiality, is in himself supremely knowable. But what is supremely knowable in itself may not be knowable to a particular intellect on account of the excess of the intelligible object above the intellect. As, for example, the sun, which is supremely visible because of its great brightness, cannot be seen by a bat. Therefore, some who considered this held that no created intellect can see the essence of God. This opinion, however, is not tenable. For as the ultimate beatitude of man consists in the use of his highest function, which is the operation of his intellect, if we suppose that the created intellect could never see God, it would either never attain to beatitude, or its beatitude would consist in something else beside God, which is opposed to faith. For the ultimate perfection of the rational creature is to be found in that which is the principle of its being, since a thing is perfect so far as it attains to its principle. Further, the same opinion is also against reason, for there resides in every man a natural desire to know the cause of any effect which he sees, and thence arises wonder in men. But if the intellect of the rational creature could not reach so far as to the first cause of things, the natural desire would remain void. Hence it must be absolutely granted that the blessed see the essence of God. First objection. It seems that no created intellect can see the essence of God. For John Chrysostom, commenting on John 1:18, "No man hath seen God at any time," says, "Not prophets only, but neither angels nor archangels have seen God, for how can a creature see what is uncreatable?" Dionysius also says, speaking of God, "Neither is there sense, nor image, nor opinion, nor reason, nor knowledge of him." Reply to the first objection. Both of these authorities speak of the vision of comprehension. Hence Dionysius premises immediately before the word cited, "He is universally to all incomprehensible." Chrysostom likewise, after the words quoted, says, "He says this of the most certain vision of the Father, which is such a perfect consideration and comprehension as the Father has of the Son." Second objection. Everything infinite as such is unknown, but God is infinite, therefore in himself he is unknown. Reply to the second objection. The infinity of matter not made perfect by form is unknown in itself, because all knowledge comes by the form, whereas the infinity of the form not limited by matter is in itself supremely known. God is infinite in this way, and not in the first way. Third objection. The created intellect knows only existing things, for what falls first under the apprehension of the intellect is being. Now God is not something existing, but he is rather superexistence, as Dionysius says. Therefore, God is not intelligible, but above all intellect. Reply to the third objection. God is not said to be not existing as if he did not exist at all, but because he exists above all that exists, inasmuch as he is his own existence. Hence, it does not follow that he cannot be known at all, but that he exceeds every kind of knowledge, which means that he is not comprehended, that is, totally understood. Fourth objection. There must be some proportion between the knower and the known, since the known is the perfection of the knower. But no proportion exists between the created intellect and God, for there is an infinite distance between them. Therefore, the created intellect cannot see the essence of God. Reply to the fourth objection. Proportion is twofold. In one sense, it means a certain relation of one quantity to another, according as double, triple, and equal are species of proportion. In another sense, every relation of one thing to another is called proportion. And in this sense, there can be a proportion of the creature to God, inasmuch as it is related to him as the effect of its cause, and as potentiality to its act. And in this way, the created intellect can be proportioned to know God. Article 11. Whether anyone in this life can see the essence of God. It is written, "Man shall not see me and live," Exodus 32:20. And a commentary on this says, "In this mortal life, God can be seen by certain images, but not by the likeness itself of his own nature." God cannot be seen in his essence by a mere human being, except when he is separated from this mortal life. The reason is, the mode of knowledge follows the mode of the nature of the knower. But our soul, as long as we live in this life, has its being in corporeal matter. Hence, naturally, it knows only what has a form in matter, or what can be known by such a form. Now, it is evident that the divine essence cannot be known through the nature of material things. For it was shown above, question 2, article 9, that the knowledge of God by means of any created similitude is not the vision of his essence. Hence, it is impossible for the soul of man in this life to see the essence of God. This can be seen in the fact that the more our soul is abstracted from corporeal things, the more it is capable of receiving abstract intelligible things. Hence, in dreams and alienations of the bodily senses, divine revelations and foresight of future events are perceived the more clearly. It is not possible, therefore, that the soul in this mortal life should be raised up to the supreme of intelligible objects, that is, the divine essence or nature. First objection. It seems that one can in this life see the divine essence. For Jacob said, "I have seen God face to face," Genesis 32:30. But to see him face to face is to see his essence, as appears from the words, "We see now in a glass and in a dark manner, but then face to face," 1 Corinthians 13:12. Reply to the first objection. According to Dionysius, a man is said in the scriptures to see God in the sense that certain figures are formed in the senses or imagination, according to some similitude representing in part the divinity. So when Jacob says, "I have seen God face to face," this does not mean the divine essence, but some figure representing God. And this is to be referred to some high mode of prophecy, so that God seems to speak, though in an imaginary vision. We may also say that Jacob spoke thus to designate some exalted intellectual contemplation above the ordinary state. Second objection. The Lord said to Moses, "I speak to him mouth to mouth and plainly, and not by riddles and figures doth he see the Lord." Numbers 12:8. But this is to see God in his essence. Therefore, it is possible to see the essence of God in this life. Reply to the second objection. As God works miracles in corporeal things, so also he does supernatural wonders above the common order, raising the minds of some living in the flesh beyond the use of sense, even up to the vision of his own essence, as St. Augustine says of Moses, the teacher of the Jews, and of Paul, the teacher of the Gentiles. Third objection. That wherein we know all other things, and whereby we judge of other things, is known in itself to us. But even now we know all things in God, for Augustine says, "We judge of all things according to the divine truth," and that it is the duty of reason to judge of these corporeal things according to the incorporeal and eternal ideas, which, unless they were above the mind, could not be incommutable. Therefore, even in this life we see God himself. Reply to the third objection. All things are said to be seen in God, and all things are judged in him, because by the participation of his light we know and judge all things. For the light of natural reason itself is a participation of the divine light, as likewise we are said to see and judge of sensible things in the sun, that is, by the sun's light. Hence Augustine says, "The lessons of instruction can only be seen, as it were, by their own sun, namely God." As therefore, in order to see a sensible object, it is not necessary to see the substance of the sun, so in like manner to see any intelligible object, it is not necessary to see the essence of God. Fourth objection. According to Augustine, those things that are in the soul by their essence are seen by intellectual vision. But intellectual vision is of intelligible things, not by similitudes, but by their very essence. Therefore, since God is in our soul by his essence, it follows that he is seen by us in his essence. Reply to the fourth objection. Intellectual vision is of the things which are in the soul by their essence, as intelligible things are in the intellect. And thus God is in the souls of the blessed. Not thus is he in our soul, but by presence, essence, and power. Article 12. Whether God can be known in this life by natural reason. It is written in Romans 1:19, "That which is known of God, namely what can be known of God by natural reason, is manifest in them. Our natural knowledge begins from sense. Hence, our natural knowledge can go as far as it can be led by sensible things. But our mind cannot be led by sense so far as to see the essence of God, because the sensible effects of God do not equal the power of God as their cause. Hence, from the knowledge of sensible things, the whole power of God cannot be known, nor therefore can his essence be seen. But because they are his effects and depend on their cause, we can be led from them so far as to know of God whether he exists, and to know of him what must necessarily belong to him as the first cause of all things, exceeding all things caused by him. Hence we know his relationship with creatures so far as to be the cause of them all, also that creatures differ from him, inasmuch as he is not in any way part of what is caused by him, and that creatures are not removed from him by reason of any defect on his part, but because he superexceeds them all. First objection. It seems that by natural reason we cannot know God in this life. For Boethius says that reason does not grasp simple form. But God is a supremely simple form, therefore natural reason cannot attain to know him. Reply to the first objection. Reason cannot reach up to simple form so as to know what it is, but it can know whether it is. Second objection. The soul understands nothing by natural reason without the use of the imagination, but we cannot have an imagination of God who is incorporeal. Therefore, we cannot know God by natural knowledge. Reply to the second objection. God is known by natural knowledge through the images of his effects. Third objection. The knowledge of natural reason belongs to both good and evil, inasmuch as they have a common nature. But the knowledge of God belongs only to the good, for Augustine says, "The weak eye of the human mind is not fixed on that excellent light unless purified by the justice of faith." Therefore, God cannot be known by natural reason. Reply to the third objection. As the knowledge of God's essence is by grace, it belongs only to the good. But the knowledge of him by natural reason can belong both to good and bad. And hence Augustine says, retracting what he had said before, "I do not approve what I said in prayer, God who willest that only the pure should know truth, for it can be answered that many who are not pure can know many truths, that is, by natural reason." Article 13. Whether by grace a higher knowledge of God can be obtained than by natural reason. The Apostle says, "God hath revealed to us his Spirit what none of the princes of this world knew," 1 Corinthians 2:10, and here he is speaking of the philosophers. We have a more perfect knowledge of God by grace than by natural reason, which is proved thus. The knowledge which we have by natural reason contains two things: images derived from the sensible objects, and the natural intelligible light, enabling us to abstract from them intelligible conceptions. Now in both of these, human knowledge is assisted by the revelation of grace. For the intellect's natural light is strengthened by the infusion of gratuitous light, and sometimes also the images in the human imagination are divinely formed, so as to express divine things better than those which we receive from sensible objects, as appears in prophetic visions. While sometimes sensible things or even voices are divinely formed to express some divine meaning, as in the baptism, the Holy Ghost was seen in the shape of a dove, and the voice of the Father was heard, "This is my beloved Son," Matthew 3:17. First objection. It seems that by grace a higher knowledge of God is not obtained than by natural reason. For Dionysius says that whoever is the more united to God in this life is united to him as to one entirely unknown. He says the same of Moses, who nevertheless obtained a certain excellence by the knowledge conferred by grace. But to be united to God while ignoring of him what he is, comes about also by natural reason. Therefore God is not more known to us by grace than by natural reason. Reply to the first objection. Although by the revelation of grace in this life we cannot know of God what he is, and thus are united to him as to one unknown, still we know him more fully according as many and more excellent of his effects are demonstrated to us, and according as we attribute to him some things known by divine revelation, to which natural reason cannot reach, as for instance that God is three and one. Second objection. We can acquire the knowledge of divine things by natural reason only through the imagination, and the same applies to the knowledge given by grace. For Dionysius says, "It is impossible for the divine ray to shine upon us, except as screened round about by the many colored sacred veils." Therefore we cannot know God more fully by grace than by natural reason. Reply to the second objection. From the images either received from sense in the natural order, or divinely formed in the imagination, we have so much the more excellent intellectual knowledge, the stronger the intelligible light is in man. And thus, through the revelation given by the images, a fuller knowledge is received by the infusion of the divine light. Third objection. Our intellect adheres to God by the grace of faith, but faith does not seem to be knowledge, for St. Gregory says that things not seen are the objects of faith and not of knowledge. Therefore, there is not given to us a more excellent knowledge of God by grace. Reply to the third objection. Faith is a kind of knowledge, inasmuch as the intellect is determined by faith to some knowable object. But this determination to one object does not proceed from the vision of the believer, but from the vision of him who is believed. Thus, as far as faith falls short of vision, it falls short of the knowledge which belongs to science, for science determines the intellect to one object by the vision and understanding of first principles.